Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Halloween Eve. Hope everybody has some really cool and fun things planned for tomorrow. But I'm glad you're here today. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you, one and all, everybody, for hanging out with me on this Friday, this lovely, sunny, but chilly, great Halloween weather. Friday morning, we've got Oh my God, I can't even tell you the tons of stuff. I'm not going to get to it all today. I'm just not. We got so much stuff to get to today. Of course, we've got, what else? Debate stuff. We've got Paul Ryan becoming Speaker of the House. I've got business as usual here going on at the IRS. The Tea Party is still being targeted. I've got, the war on women, the Liberals love to talk about the war on women. Democrats love to talk about the war on women that Republicans have started. Well, it's women who have suffered under Obama policies more than just about anybody else. Plus, I want to talk a little bit today about Halloween itself, because this is, of course, Conservative Cauldron Radio. Some of where it all started, some of the history, some of the why we do what we do. Some of the misconceptions about Halloween and what it is, and because part of my job here is to educate and tell people about not only myself being a Wiccan and being a witch, but to tell people not to shove my faith down people's throats. That's not what I'm here to do. Everyone has their own faith, and that's not going to change, and that's the way it should be. God bless America. But to tell people what it is, but to also educate about what it's not either, because there are so many misconceptions about it. But please call in here if you want. We can talk debate. We can talk Halloween. We can talk whatever you want. The number is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620. Or the chat room, of course, is always open. But so let's go. Like I said, I got, oh my God, I can't even tell you, so much stuff to get into today. But, of course, what else? The debate. I don't know that I've ever seen, and I think a lot of people probably have this same opinion, I don't know that that we've ever seen anything quite like it. It was, I think, I'm going to let Ted Cruz say it much better than I am in a minute here, but I think that if you watched those debate moderators and you listened to the questions that they posed, and you listened to the tone of their voice, and you listened to their attitude, if you just listened to the whole package together, Ted Cruz hit a grand slam when he said that this is the reason that the American people do not trust the mainstream media anymore. And probably people like me who are maybe these esteemed journalists with degrees and letters after their names and things like that, maybe they like to refer to people like me as citizen journalists. That's fine. I'll take that name. I'll take that moniker. I'll take that title. And maybe they do so in kind of a snarky, looking down their nose kind of way, but they are the reason that people like me are not only deciding to they're not only deciding to start blogs and start websites and come on Blog Talk Radio and start their own form of communication. These are the people, we probably owe them a debt of gratitude. We owe, really, in all actuality, I owe them a thank you, because it's people like that that are making it easy for me and people like me to do what I do, because people don't trust them anymore. And they're kind of saying, you know what, people suck at what they do. They're lying to me. They're not telling me the truth. They're picking and choosing what they want me to know and what they don't want me to know. They're trying to make people that I'm considering voting for president of the United States, they're trying to make these people look like idiots and doofuses. I don't like that, so I'm going to go elsewhere to get my information and to get my news by people who, sure, people, whether you're a citizen journalist, whether you're a journalist, whether, you know, no matter who you are, people are human and they're going to have their own opinion. But and if you listen to a show like this, or if you watch Fox News, or if you watch MSNBC, you know that if you watch Fox, that it's going to slant right. You know that if you watch MSNBC, it's going to slant left. So if you know what you're getting into beforehand and that's what you want to watch, hey, again, God bless America. But that's not what a debate is. A debate is to present the people who are running for this office, the highest office in the land, and you want to know what their views are on the issues that are affecting this country, because there are so many, too many to enumerate here, too many issues and too many concerns facing this nation that the American people, average men and women, care about. They care about the economy. They care about jobs. They care about energy independence. They care about how the United States presents itself and is presented overseas. They care about a strong defense. They care about all of those things. They don't care about whether or not these doofuses on who are moderators of this debate care whether or not they like Donald Trump. They don't care whether or not they think that you know, all of these people are idiots and that the whole world should vote for Hillary Clinton. You know, I mean, it's all of these people, all of these moderators. And again, who the hell knows who these moderators are? Nobody knew who the hell these people were. Carl Quintanilla, Becky Quick, and who was the other guy? John Harwood. Nobody, unless you are a everyday watcher of CNBC, nobody knows who the hell these people are. Well, they do now, but it's probably not the way that Carl and Becky and John, they wanted to become household names. That's obvious, but they've done it in a way that they probably didn't want to do. But I'm going to start out here. I've got so much sound to get to today here. So I'm just going to start kind of in a broad general way, just with some highlights here from Wednesday night's debate, and then we'll kind of pare it down and we'll go from here. But here's some tidbits to tease you just a little bit.
Where did I read this and come up with this that you were
probably, I don't know, you people write this stuff, I don't know where you're.
Now, the Democrats have the ultimate super PAC. It's called the mainstream media. Whoever single day.
I don't think it's so much about when the government orders a corporation to do something. In fact, that's part of the problem. If you saw that blimp that got cut loose from Maryland today, it's a perfect example of government. I mean, what we had was something the government made, basically a bag of gas that cut loose, destroyed everything in its path, left thousands of people powerless, but they couldn't get rid of it because we had too much money invested in it, so we had to keep it. That is our government today. We saw it in the blimp.
We have $19 trillion in debt. We have people out of work. We have ISIS and Al-Qaeda attacking us. And we're talking about fantasy football?
Would you feel more comfortable if your employees brought guns to work?
Yes, I might feel more comfortable. I would say that I would. And I have a permit, which is very unusual in New York, a permit to carry. And I do carry on occasion. Sometimes a lot, but I like to be unpredictable so that people don't know exactly what you're carrying.
Are you carrying right now?
By the way,
Governor Huckabee, you've written about the huge divide in values between middle America and the big coastal cities like New York and Los Angeles.
as a preacher as well as a politician, you know that presidents need the moral authority to bring the entire country together. The leading Republican candidate, when you look at the average of national polls right now, is Donald Trump. When you look at him, do you see someone with the moral authority to unite the country?
You know, as few questions I've got, the last one I need is to give him some more time. I love Donald Trump. He is a good man. I'm wearing a Trump tie tonight. Get over that one, okay?
Now, is that made in Mexico?
I don't know.
Is it made? Is it made in
China? Made in China or Mexico?
I have no idea.
Such a nasty, question. But thank you, Governor.
You're welcome. Let me tell you, Donald Trump would be a better president every day of the week and twice on Sunday rather than Hillary. I've spent a lifetime in politics fighting the Clinton machine.
What should we do?
What we should do is to be investing in all types of energy, John. All types of energy. And I've laid out...
Being government?
No, John. John, do you want me to answer? You want to answer. How are we going to do that? I got to tell you the truth. Even in New Jersey, what you're doing is called rude. So,
I may not be your dream candidate just yet, but I can assure you I'm Hillary Clinton's worst nightmare. And in your heart of hearts, you cannot wait to see a debate between Hillary Clinton and Carly Fiorina.
These folks, CNBC, they had it down at three and a half hours. I just read today in the New York Times, $250,000 for a 30-second ad. I went out and said, it's ridiculous. Nobody, I could stand up here all night. Nobody wants to watch 3.5 or 3 hours. It was a big sacrifice, and I have to hand it to Ben. We called Ben. He was with me 100%. We called in. We said, that's it. We're not doing it. They lost a lot of money. Everybody said it couldn't be done. Everybody said it was going to be 3 hours, 3.5, including them. And at about 2 minutes, I renegotiated it down to 2 hours so we can get the hell out of here. Not bad.
Sorry about the technical difficulties there. There was some great highlights there that I did want you to hear, but I've got plenty more, and a lot of those things are included in that sound clip. You know, most of that, there's a lot of people who will, you know, the general consensus still is that that Donald Trump ran away with this debate. I don't know that he ran away with it. He seemed kind of tame to me. He seemed a little mellow. And I also heard some other people bring that up too. You know, maybe he's got kind of a new strategy going here. Maybe someone has said, maybe you need to tone down the personal attacks. And, you know, not, I don't think anybody's going to say that, that you shouldn't, you know, that you shouldn't fire back if somebody fires first. Absolutely. But he really did. He seemed a little bit more mellow, and I think maybe now to go along with the mellow, and I heard someone else say this morning, that maybe he really does need to start getting more specific on policy, on his policy issues. He has introduced a tax plan. He needs to do some more like that. And when he introduces policies, when he introduces plans like that, I think he really needs to spell out specifically what it is that he wants to do, because he can say he can lay out those plans and say, okay, I want to do A, B, C, and D, but I think you have to be specific. And I'm not saying that American people are stupid, not at all, but be clear. Just be very specific and be very clear about what you want to do. And you know, I think also too, because there is such a large number of people that are on that stage, that there are going to be some snipes at each other, and there's going to be some jabs. And one of the most surprising ones was between Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. And I don't think that anybody thinks at all at this point that it helped out Jeb. But I do think it helped Marco Rubio tremendously, because It kind of shows that maybe people who were maybe dismissing him shows that he has a little bit of spunk and that he was able to fight back. And not only to fight back, but somebody that he considers a friend and a mentor, that you know, that he wasn't just gonna lay down for that personal attack. And you know, I don't know I heard the great one, Mark Levin, last night talking about Jeb Bush's campaign, and I tend to agree with him because he said, you know, his numbers are obviously not where he wants them to be, but it also doesn't seem like, and I think that more and more people are coming to this conclusion that it doesn't seem like that he's got a fire in the belly for this, that he really doesn't, you know, that it's, we know that he had the big family meeting last weekend about, you know, with the donors and all of that, but is this something that he feels is some sort of family legacy that it's just his turn that he needs to do? It's we know that his family wants this, but does he really want it? And the exchange between he and Marco Rubio, again, I think was really surprising to a lot of people, but here it is. Let's listen.
Sun Sentinel says Rubio should resign, not rip us off. When they say Floridian sent you to Washington to do a job, when they say you act like you hate your job, do you?
Yeah, let me say, I read that editorial today with a great amusement. It's actually evidence of the bias that exists in the American media today.
So do you hate your job?
Let me answer your question on the Sun Sentinel editorial today. Back in 2004, one of my predecessors to the Senate by the name of Bob Graham, a Democrat, ran for president, missing over 30% of his votes. I don't recall them calling for his resignation.
Is that the standard?
Later that year, in 2004, John Kerry ran for president, missing close to 60 to 70% of his votes. I don't recall the Sun Sentinel. In fact, the Sun Sentinel endorsed him. In 2008, Barack Obama missed 60 or 70% of his votes, and the same newspaper endorsed him again. So this is another example of the double standard that exists in this country between the mainstream media and the conservative media.
John,
can I bring something up here? Because I'm a constituent of the senator, and I helped him, and I expected that he would do constituent service, which means that he shows up to work. He got endorsed by the Sun Sentinel because he was the most talented guy in the field. He's a gifted politician. But Marco, when you signed up for this, this was a six-year term, and you should be showing up to work. I mean, literally, the Senate, what is it, like a French work week? You get like 3 days where you have to show up? You can campaign or just resign and let someone else take the job. There are a lot of people living paycheck to paycheck in Florida as well. They're looking for a senator that will fight for them each and every day.
Well, it's interesting. Over the last few weeks, I've listened to Jeb as he walked around the country and said that you're modeling your campaign after John McCain, that you're going to launch a furious comeback the way he did by fighting hard in New Hampshire and places like that, carrying your own bag at the airport. You know how many votes John McCain missed when he was carrying out that furious comeback that you're now modeling it under?
He wasn't my...
No, Jeb, I don't remember... Well, let me tell you, I don't remember you ever complaining about John McCain's vote record. The only reason why you're doing it now is because we're running for the same position, and someone has convinced you that attacking me is going to help you.
Well, I've been...
Here's the bottom line. I'm not... My campaign is going to be about the future of America. It's not going to be about attacking anyone else on this stage. I will continue to have tremendous admiration and respect for Governor Bush. I'm not running against Governor Bush. I'm not running against anyone on the stage. I'm running for president because there is no way we can elect Hillary Clinton to continue the policies of Barack Obama.
Again, I think that was really a surprising exchange for a lot of people between Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. And I'm with a lot of people when I say that I don't think that this exchange helped Jeb Bush in any way. In fact, I think a lot of people are really kind of wondering that it's maybe kind of a matter of time, that it's not if but when he is going to decide to get out. Don't think there's another debate here scheduled for November the 10th, so that's coming up pretty quickly. After the other night, after Wednesday night, I don't see a lot of people. I don't see anybody unless it's somebody that was on the early debate. You know, Pataki, Bobby Jindal, Lindsey Graham. excuse me. If somebody's going to drop out, it's going to be one of them. I think I don't think that anybody on this main stage it has any intentions of dropping out before the next debate. Now, I'm not sure after the November 10th debate, I'm not sure when the next one is. It very well could be not until after the first of the year because people are involved with you know, the holidays and all of that. But so I think we're going to see the same group of people here on November the 10th. I don't have any doubt about that. But again, this whole evening really was and the candidates did their best, I thought, to get the issues in that they wanted to talk about and try to get past all of the crap that the moderators were dishing out. And, you know, again, they might as well have all have had their Hillary 2016 T-shirts on. I mean, and by all accounts, Reince Priebus and the head honchos, the big cheeses there at the RNC, are pretty livid about all this. And I saw Reince Priebus interviewed last night. I believe it was by Sean Hannity. And he is insisting, as of yesterday, that there is going to be meetings with all of the candidates' campaign people, that there is going to be a lot of reevaluation of any future debates, and that there's going to be some changes. And I hope he'll stick to that, because I don't think anybody has any more patience for this kind of thing. But and again, I think this kind of became, unfortunately, it kind of became the theme of the evening. And, you know, maybe that was the intent the whole time, to get all of these candidates off message. Well, it is, because it's the mainstream media. Therefore, we know it's the intent to get them off message and to make them look like buffoons. But I'm going to take a short break here. I've got plenty more sound to get to. And since it is Halloween Eve today, and of course, you know, Halloween is kind of a big deal to me, kind of a big day, special holiday, we're going to talk a little bit about Halloween. We're going to talk about kind of some of the history. I wanted to do something different today. We're going to talk about some of the history. We're going to talk about what it is, but we're also going to talk about what it's not. So I got a lot more to get to. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. TGIF. Thanks for tuning in. I will be right back.
ain't afraid of no game.
Conservative Cauldron Radio. Happy Halloween Eve, everybody. I hope everybody has their pumpkins carved and their pillowcase ready for tons of tricks and treats, and hope you got your costume all ready to go. Hope the weather is good wherever you are. It's supposed to be a little chilly here, maybe a little rain early tomorrow, but hopefully that's going to clear on out and it'll be perfect trick-or-treat weather. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble, and, of course, we are going through all of the massive analysis, discussion, pick a word, on Wednesday night's GOP presidential debate. And, if you are a Republican or a conservative, because we all know that in this day and age, there's a difference. There's, and sometimes it's a big difference. But the one thing I think that we can all agree on is that the moderators of this debate, the big losers on Wednesday night, were the media, and it wasn't just these doofus moderators from CNBC. It was because they represent a class of people. And, when you look at these people, they all go to the same schools. They all graduate from the same schools. They go to the same parties. They all have the same friends. And when they're broadcasting, when they do stories, when they do things like this, they're not doing it for the American people. They're not doing it for Joe and Mary Smith, who live in middle America and live in flyover country. They don't live in New York or Chicago or Los Angeles. They don't live where it matters. And they're normal average American people. And they don't, these media types, and it's a class. Carly Fiorina likes to talk about the political class, and she's right about that. We do have a political class, people that have made being a congressman or a senator or whatever it is your role in government is, they've made things that were never intended to be careers. And so we do have a political class now, and that's a big part of the problem of what's going on today. And so not only do we have a political class, we have a media class, I think, too. We have these people who and the relationship between the media and government, at least right now, and it could be that way all the time. It's so incestuous because they're all married to each other, they're all dating each other. I mean, it's such a cluster. Yeah, everybody was pissed off at these three moderators because it was so obvious what they were doing. It was so obvious what their intention was. And like I said, they might as well have all been wearing their Hillary 2016 T-shirts. I was waiting for somebody to throw them a bunch so they could just put them on during the break, because I mean that was the only thing that was missing. But they represent a class of people, and it's the media class. And I'm going to let Ted Cruz explain it much better than I could. But like I said also just now, it was that it's very obvious that not just these three, but the mainstream media in general, we already know, we've known for a long time that they have an agenda. And their agenda is whatever the Democrat Party agenda is. And it's their job to push it. It's their job to shove it down the throats of the American people and to make it palatable. And they'll do, obviously, in light of the other night, they'll do whatever needs to be done in order to do that. And so, again, but I said this before the break, this kind of became the theme for the evening. And they were called out several times by these candidates, and thank God that they were. And I think that it was so refreshing for people, not just people there in the audience, but for everybody watching at home or wherever it is you were watching from. I think that the fact that there was this massive pushback by the candidates because of these so obvious moderators, I think it was so refreshing for people, and it was such a breath of fresh air that I've seen plenty of people online and, you know, Facebook, Twitter, what have you, that talked about how they, and I was one myself, who practically stood up in their living rooms applauding what was going on. And one of the great lines of the night also here came from Florida Senator Marco Rubio, and he was right. He was dead on, and he was once again calling these three out.
Yeah, but not
my apologies. I'm sorry.
Everybody's really doing some bad facts.
Since I've been mentioned, can I respond?
Yes, you may.
Okay. The Democrats have the ultimate super PAC. It's called the mainstream media. Whoever's seen it, and I'll tell you why. Last week, Hillary Clinton went before a committee. She admitted she had sent emails to her family saying, "Hey, this attack in Benghazi was caused by al-Qaeda-like elements." She spent over a week telling the families of those victims and the American people that it was because of a video. And yet the mainstream media is going around saying it was the greatest week in Hillary Clinton's campaign. It was the week she got exposed as a liar. It was the week that she got exposed as a liar. But she has her super PAC helping her out, the American mainstream media.
And he's absolutely right. Once again, if you turned on, at the end of last week, after that hearing on Benghazi, if you turned on CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, pick one. All of those people were going to go on and on and on about what a great week that Hillary Clinton had. And Marco Rubio is perfectly right. That's a great week when you are exposed to the American people, all 350 million of them, that you are a liar, that you had no problem not only lying to them, also had no problem lying over the caskets of dead Americans to their family members. That's the kind of person that what are her numbers at now? 40-something percent of the American people think would make a good president? Are you kidding me? So, yeah, he's absolutely right. That is Hillary Clinton's super PAC. That is the Democrat Party's biggest super PAC is the mainstream media. And again, there was many, many times that not just these three moderators, because again, they just represent, they represent a group. They represent a cabal, if you will, of mainstream media reporters, pundits, writers, you know, you name it. And again, it's their message. It's their job to get the candidates off message. Not obviously, that was their job. It was not their job to get the candidates to talk about issues and what their stance on the issues is and what are their plans. What's their economic plan? What's their tax plan? Do they have an energy plan? We really didn't learn any of that the other night because the agendas of Carl Quintanilla and John Harwood and Becky Quick, their agenda was front and center. And again, like I said, the candidates all did their best to try and go around that, but it was very difficult. But I wanted to save this one for last because I know everybody's heard it, and I don't know about anybody else, but I could hear it again and again and again and stand up and applaud each time I hear it. But Texas Senator Ted Cruz had the line of the evening. It was a grand slam, and I think he could have kept going had it not been for all of the back clutter surrounding him, the moderators trying to get him to stop, and some of the other candidates who are also trying to jump in and I think kind of help him out a little bit, but he didn't need any help. So I've saved the best for last. Here you go. This is, I think maybe some people might call this conservative porn, but here you go, Ted Cruz.
Kyle. Senator Cruz, congressional Republicans, Democrats, and the White House are about to strike a compromise that would raise the debt limit, prevent a government shutdown, and calm financial markets. That fear of another Washington-created crisis is on the way. Does your opposition to it show that you're not the kind of problem solver American voters want?
You know, let me say something at the outset. The questions that have been asked so far in this debate illustrate why the American people don't trust the media. This is not a cage match. And you look at the questions, Donald Trump, are you a comic book villain? Ben Carson, can you do math? John Kasich, will you insult two people over here? Marco Rubio, why don't you resign? Jeb Bush, why have your numbers fallen? How about talking about the substantive issues people care about? Carl, I'm not finished yet. The contrast with the Democratic debate, where every fawning question from the media was, which of you is more handsome and wise?
So this is
and
a
let
question
me be
about
clear.
The debt limit, which you have 30 seconds left to answer, should you choose to do so.
Let me be clear. The men and women on this stage have more ideas, more experience, more common sense than every participant in the Democratic debate. That debate reflected a debate between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. And nobody watching at home believes that any of the moderators has any intention of voting in a Republican primary. The questions that are being asked shouldn't be trying to get people to tear into each other. It should be, what are your substantive solutions to people?
I just want the record to reflect. I asked you about the debt limit, and I got no answer.
Okay, all right. You want me to answer that question? I'm happy to answer the question. I'm happy to answer the question, but let me tell you how the question is. Let me tell you how that
question
is. Let me tell you how that
question is. Senator Paul, I've got a question for you.
So you don't actually want to hear the answer, John?
Senator Paul?
You don't want to hear the answer. You just want to hear the insult.
You used your time on something else. Senator Paul?
You're not interested in an answer.
John?
I'm
interested in an answer from Senator Paul. Senator Paul, the budget deal crafted by Speaker Boehner and passed by the House today makes cuts.
They absolutely didn't want to hear the answer because they knew they weren't going to like it. But I wish, I said to someone yesterday that I wish that at the end of what Ted Cruz had to say, I wish that the camera would have turned to the audience because I would have loved to see the audience reaction. I mean, you could obviously hear it, but there is no doubt in my mind that there was a standing ovation going on there. I just don't believe there wasn't. And you know, later on when Ted Cruz was being interviewed by someone, he happened to say, you know what, I think the what a perfect debate would be, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, but something to the effect of a perfect Republican debate would be to have the moderators be Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, and Rush Limbaugh. And anybody who goes online, you can see that there are a lot of people who have picked that up and are running with it. And you know, who knows, that may happen, but I gotta agree. That would be a fantastic group of debate moderators, because you would get some questions on substantive issues that people care about, that they want to hear how these candidates feel and what they're going to do. But the next debate is on the Fox Business Channel. I believe that Neil Cavuto is going to be one of the moderators, Sandra Smith, Maria Bartiromo, there's one other person, forgive me, I don't remember her name. So that one there may not be a problem there. And you know, here's the bottom line, and I'm going to go on real quickly to some other things before we talk about Halloween. I don't think that any one of us wants these people to be thrown softballs. Nobody wants that. We want them to be thrown tough questions because we want to hear their answers. And so that's not a problem for us. tough questions are not a problem. When you have moderators who care nothing about, they don't care about anything else but pitting the candidates against each other. And this is interesting also because I don't know if anybody remembers, but before the Democrat debate, CNN very publicly came out and talked about how they were not going to pit the candidates against each other. Really? Really? So what was the difference between then and now? Well, I think we know the difference. But very quickly here, I'm going to touch on a few other things here very quickly before we talk about what tomorrow is and what it means. But, you know, you can always count on our old buddy Chris Matthews to take up for the underdog, especially when the underdog are his fellow mainstream media lapdogs. Well, he came to the defense of the moderators of the debate the other night. And the quote from Chris Matthews here was that they were totally straight reporters who had to take crap from the candidates. Really, the moderators were taking crap from the candidates. Funny, Chris, but I didn't hear the candidates ask if these people were comic book reporters. They didn't ask Carl Quintanilla to insult Becky Quick. They didn't. There were no insinuations and implications made of these moderators the way there were the candidates, because we all know that the mainstream media, their job, their one and only job, is to make Republicans and conservatives look like freaks, look like the fringe. So I'm not sure where you get that, Chris, because you know, who was taking crap from who? That's really all I got to say about that. And you know, you just, you know, it's coming from Chris Matthews. So I mean, you really don't need to say anything more about that. But very quickly here, of course, also this week, Paul Ryan was elected Speaker of the House, and he earned 236 votes. And he is one of the youngest people at 45, I believe, to hold this office. He is now third in line for the presidency, or second in line, I guess, behind the vice president. And some couple of quotes here from him. Quote, "Let's be frank. The House is broken. We're not solving problems. We're adding to them, and I am not interested in laying blame. We are not settling scores. We are wiping the slate clean." He also went on to say, quote, neither the members nor the people are satisfied with how things are going. We need to make some changes. A respected minority, referring to Democrats, would be working in good faith with Republicans. Well, you know, we'll see. But that ends the reign of Speaker of the House John Boehner, who I think really was kind of one of the divisive elements in all of this. And one of the quotes that I saw from John Boehner said that he felt that one of the reasons that he was forced to step down was that there are so many radio show hosts who are trying to, quote, outright each other. No, Speaker Boehner, that's not why. The reason why you were, if you want to say that you were forced out of office, that's fine if that's how you feel. But the reason that most people felt that there needed to be a change was because you weren't fighting anything that Barack Obama had on his agenda. You went right along with it, hook, line, and sinker. Did you make all of these deals on the golf course, or what was the deal with that? That's what conservatives and Republicans want. They want a little bit of fight out of the Republicans that they sent to Washington to fight for them. They want a little pushback. They don't want you endorsing the president and the Democrats' agenda right down the line. And that's what you were doing. And if you weren't doing it, you made an awfully good show of making it look like you were doing it. And so if you want to know that that's what the problem is, that's what the problem was. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it talk show house trying to outright each other, you know, whatever you want. But so there's that. We have a new Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. And You know, I'm not completely sold on him as well yet either. We'll have to wait and see. I think we'll have to wait and see what he does and how he does it. But also, there's a story here in the Washington Times that apparently it's business as usual at the IRS that there are Tea Party groups that, in fact, one that has been waiting nearly 6 years for approval of their tax-exempt status. And this is comes after Lois Lerner was cleared last week of any wrongdoing. Imagine that, by this Justice Department. Shocking. The Obama administration's decision outlined in a, this would have been a week ago today, Friday afternoon letter to Congress that said the IRS did mishandle nonprofit status applications from conservative groups, but said the bad behavior wasn't criminal. There are still several lawsuits, including one seeking to be certified. There's a class action lawsuit with several groups that is still pending against the IRS. Mark Meckler, who is president of Citizens for Self-Government and is also one of the organizers of the class action lawsuit, his quote is, "It's no wonder why so many Americans have had it with Washington and the elite political class who can get away with something like this." There's another case pending before federal courts lost their case at the district level, where the judge ruled that the IRS targeting stopped in 2013, so there was no longer a case to be decided. That is news to the Albuquerque, New Mexico Tea Party, which applied for nonprofit status in December of 2009 and is still waiting approval. And their attorneys are through the American Center for Law and Justice. That would be Jay Sekulow's group. And another of the center's clients, Unite in Action, that is an Ohio group that has been waiting more than 3 years for approval. So there are it's apparently business as usual at the IRS. I know that there has been some impeachment proceedings begun against John Koskinen, who is the head of the IRS there now. And there's a lot of Republicans, I think, that question the validity of the probe from the Justice Department from the beginning, especially after learning that one of the Justice Department lawyers assigned to the investigation was a contributor to President Obama's presidential campaign. You think there might be a little bit of bias there? Shocking. Again, in its letter last week, the Justice Department specifically cleared Ms. Lerner in charge of a senior executive in charge of approving the group's applications, who had authored a number of emails that suggested a bias was there against the Tea Party movement. The Justice Department is, it is what it is. But so there's that. There are still Tea Party groups that are still waiting to have their tax exempt status affirmed. And, who knows? They may be waiting until we have a new president. It's hard to say until there is a new regime there at the IRS. But I would like to talk a little bit about Halloween right now and what it is and what it is not, because there's so much misconception about it. There's groups of people that believe that it's evil. I'm not going to tell anybody I'm not going to interpret someone's religious beliefs for them. It's not my place. It's not what I do here. But some of the history of Halloween is that it has a long history. It goes back even to pre-Christian times. The Romans had harvest festivals, and that's basically what Halloween started out as. It started out as a harvest festival, and it was celebrated by people who were polytheistic societies, worshipped many gods and goddesses. Again, this was before this was pre-Christian times. The Druids had harvest ceremonies, and But I think it really started getting going about the time that the Celts appeared in Ireland. And it started out kind of a remembrance of your ancestors. Not only a harvest festival, it remained a harvest festival, but again, it was a kind of a remembrance of your ancestors, the people that have come before you. And when the potato famine occurred in 1845 in Ireland, and you had a lot of Irish immigrants that came to America, they brought a lot of those traditions and they brought a lot of those customs with them. And one of those customs was the celebration of Samhain. And I know we've all seen this word, and it's spelled Samhain, but it's pronounced either Samhain or Samhain. And Samhain is still a harvest holiday. And but you know, now when people, not everyone lives in a agricultural society, harvest can come in a lot of different ways. We don't just harvest grain if you're a farmer. We don't just harvest fruits and vegetables out of our own personal gardens. There's a lot of things that we harvest. We harvest ideas, and we harvest if you have a dream to do something, to accomplish a goal. That's a harvest as well, in and of itself. And you want to celebrate those things. And it's also still about, a lot of people want to call it, remembering the dead and that having some evil connotations about it. But what it is, yes, you're remembering the dead, but you're remembering your loved ones. You're remembering people who have gone before you. And again, I'm not sure why that is, why that is classified as evil, remembering your loved ones. But going back a little, I'm going to digress here a little bit. As Christianity started to spread across Europe, and including Ireland, that in order to get the pagan population to convert to Christianity, what they did, the church did a lot of things like that. They would make Christian holidays, make them the same day or a day before or a day after. A lot of they would make them very close to pagan holidays, and that's kind of what has gone on here. Because of course November 1st is All Souls Day or All Saints Day, depending on what your Christian denomination is. And but again, I know I'm kind of jumping around here, but as Irish immigrants came here after the potato famine, they brought these Halloween customs and traditions with them. And you know, how many of us tomorrow night are going to have a carved pumpkin on our front porch with a candle inside it? That started out really as being turnips. The Irish used turnips to do that. And there's a lot of American Halloween is a lot different from traditional Halloween, and I like to explain that to people, because American Halloween is the whole scary, spooky kind of thing. You watch scary movies, and it's all about kind of in a way about evil things and spooky and scary. But like I said, like I'm doing my best to explain, maybe I'm doing it well, maybe I'm not, that traditional Halloween is about not just celebrating the final harvest of the year, but it's also about remembering your ancestors and your loved ones, the people who have gone before you. And even back in Victorian days, that's when American Halloween, and I say American Halloween just to distinguish between American and traditional, there started to be the fun aspect of it, where people would dress up in costumes, not just children, but adults as well, and they would have parties, and they would have they would do things like divinations, and one of the things they would do maybe was bobbing for apples. Everybody's done that at least once in their life. And they would cut the apple, they would cut the apples in half, and based on the shape of the apples, when the women would do it, when girls would do it, it was supposed to tell you when in your lifetime that you were going to get married and what your husband was going to be like and things like that. Those kind of divinations. And, you know, we've also heard all the stories about, you know, people putting razor blades in candy for the kids. And I don't know that there's so much of that now, because there's so many private parties. Now you have the trunk or treats and you have the school parties and things. Unfortunately, because there are truly evil people in the world, and a lot of people, you know, don't want to take their kids out trick or treating, and that's sad, because that's a fond childhood memory for a lot of us, and the fact that some kids can't do that is kind of sad. But again, there are Halloween is not the a lot of religions tend to view it as being satanic. Satan really doesn't have anything to do with sowin. It's, again, it's about celebrating harvests and celebrating remembering the ancestors, the people who've gone before you. And so Satan really doesn't have anything to do with it. And I can tell you that in the Wiccan religion, we don't believe in Satan. We believe in balance. We believe in there being a balance between all things. But we really don't have a devil concept, that kind of persona in our faith. But I would hope that maybe through things like this that I can help everyone understand what things like Halloween are and understand what they're not. And I could go on, but it's time for me to get out of here. I hope that everybody has a fantastically outrageous, fun, and very safe Halloween. Have a great time. You can find me at theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Please also go to theblacksphere.net. Kevin Jackson has a fantastic, and there are lots of not just Kevin, but a lot of awesomely talented people there, and they have a lot to write about and a lot to say, and it's all very, very entertaining and educational and enlightening. So please go there. You can go to Facebook, facebook.com/BeckyNoble, and I am on Twitter at Patriot Witch, of course. Again, everybody have a fantastic, fun, and safe Halloween. I am out of here, and I will see you next time.